Hello, and welcome to episode 183 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined, as always, by Matthew Figuera.
And I'm here to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, also, thanks, man. Thanks, man. Now the podcast is helmed by two 30-year-olds.
Oh, officially. My God. Two old farts.
There's no Zoomer energy in this podcast at all.
Oh, anymore. My God. You've made it to the big 3-0. And I take great joy in telling anyone who hits 30 that things do slowly change. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not an old man yet, but there are certain things, like you feel a little bit, you know, more aches in certain places, and you just injure easier, I guess.
Okay. So yeah, it's just like going through puberty.
But in reverse.
Yeah. But in reverse.
Instead of growing hair, all your hair recedes.
Oh my goodness. I don't want my hair to recede. I just want it to go gray. I don't care about aging.
Oh my God. Has your hair not started going gray?
Oh, I have gray hairs every now and then, like all the time. But apparently, I've heard this from our hairdresser that your hair genes come from your mother. So if your mother in old age went gray, you are likely to go gray. And if she went bald, you're likely to go bald.
Yeah, my mom's pretty gray, but I think she dyes her hair.
Oh, is it?
Like you'd never
know. But at least she's not balding, so...
No. No.
You'll never lose that fantastic mop.
I got the good hair genes, I think.
Yeah. Hell yeah. My dad is balding, but my mom like has very thick hair, but also just very gray. So I'm like sick. I'm going to look like Geralt when I'm 50. You know? just got to get that ponytail going. Have you ever found it strange in games how, like, you know, they let you change your hairstyle, but some hairstyles are like you just magically grow hair? Like even in The Witcher.
Oh, yeah.
Like you can go from his like fancy ponytail undercut to like full on raggy long hair. And it's like, this isn't how hairdressers work.
It also happens that the recent example, Pokemon Arceus, it's the same thing. It's like, cool, sit down, I'll cut your hair. You choose a hairstyle with, you know, full hair. And it's just like, how did this happen?
Just swept up the hair from the floor and glued it together and just like, put it.
You look so good. There you go. It'll be 500, whatever the currency is.
Just don't like run around too fast. Otherwise that toupee is going to fly off.
Yeah. But 30 is a milestone. How are you feeling?
Yeah. It's weird. It's strange. I think I've spoken about it before. I don't even know if it was on the podcast or not, but I think 30 is weird because, like, I can remember my mom's 30th. Like, I was, I think, like 4 years old when she turned 30.
That's weird.
So it's like one of like those very early memories where I can remember. I distinctly remember it because I remember one of the gifts she got was a mug that said, like, I'm 30, I should have money by now or some shit like that. It was one of those silly like novelty mugs. And I distinctly remember that. So I'm like thinking about where she was at that age and where I am. And I mean, you can't compare because it's two different generations. The world has changed fundamentally between now and then, but it's just weird. It's like,
well, it is funny to think that even in your mom's day, the whole thing was, you know, by 30, you should have made it. So that hasn't changed. Yeah.
That hasn't changed. No, I feel like it's worse for us though, because like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that this is the norm, but I feel like there are fewer and fewer people who own a house or have children by the age of 30. You know what I mean? Whereas I think maybe in the past, that was more of the common thing.
I think it is a lot more accessible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back in the day, where now, I don't know, like looking at buying property and even buying a car is like, you could buy a car, but then how long do you pay it off? Like, what period of time do you pay it off over? And what is the interest? It's super high. I mean, I don't know if I ever said this in the podcast, but there was a time like maybe 2 or 3 years ago where I got an increase and I was like, that's cool. Like, I'm earning a bit more money now. Maybe I should just treat myself to a new car. You know, let me just have a look. No, but you know, I'm like, my car's going on 10 years old now. It's cool. Like, let me just investigate. And let me tell you, I very quickly did a 180 because entry level cars, I was like, that's it's become not worth it.
Very
it's,
expensive.
It's yeah. like in my head, I was like, yeah, if a car costs X amount, like I could comfortably afford to pay that off.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Cars are like more than double.
Absolutely.
Like and from what when I bought my car. I mean, and my car was a demo model and whatever.
Yeah. But you, I mean, I drive a Polo that is also about nine years old. Yeah, your car's also
going on 10, I think.
And it's like, I remember getting it. It was also a demo model. And I think at the time it cost 140,000 Rand, which was like, you know, not entry level at the time. It was like just above entry level because, you know, Polos.
It's going on mid-range.
Exactly.
It's like low to mid-range, yeah.
But now the entry level Polo is like over 300,000 Rand. And like even Golfs, my parents always drove VW Golfs. And now like, I'm like, okay, you know, a Golf is a very nice car, whatever. They started over 600,000 Rand. I'm like, that's fucking obscene. I can't like, yeah, no. But
that was my thing as well, where like the entry level car at the time that I looked at, I'm talking like bare bones, like bottom of the range, anything was like 150, 160. And I was like,
okay. No, they're super expensive.
I'd want like a you know, I'm in my 30s. I want to at least like a upper low to low mid range.
Exactly.
Like I can't afford that. My car's absolutely fine. I'm just going to keep driving it. So
yeah, that's the thing. Like unless you absolutely need a new car, which is a bad position to be in, like you shouldn't. It's never a good investment. But it's tempting. I get it. It's like, I've been driving the same thing for like 10 years as well. And it's like, you know, something new would be nice, you know,
in my defense,
something that's
my
automatic.
Car still looks,
you know,
my car still looks good. So it's
fine. Exactly.
It's an old little Fiesta, but I was actually telling Lenska well enough the other day, I don't know, we sort of stumbled onto a similar conversation where, you know, in old cars, the interior sort of starts to weather, like if the seat will sort of like fray at the end you know, it'll split. My car doesn't have that at all. And I was like, I don't know how. I mean, I've driven it.
You've taken good care of it, clearly.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm sitting on my seat lightly. I've been using my car and it hasn't aged in that
way.
You
kept the plastic on your seats, you know.
I've got those good fluffy seat covers.
Oh my God, I hate them. I hate them.
My goodness. I did have a pair of fluffy dice in my car years ago.
Really? I would have loved to have seen that. Absolutely.
Little pair of black fluffy dice. It was a good time.
Yeah. Cars, like, I've also been over the past like year or a bit looking at new cars because I'm like, oh, you know, I want a bigger one. You know, something a bit more, something with like nice things like automatic gearbox and, you know, like Apple CarPlay or something like that. And it's like, cool, you know, those are pretty much standard in a lot of cars now, but
yeah,
you're looking, oh God, for any of the cars I would, you know, think that it's worth upgrading to, they're like close to R500,000. I'm like, that's just stupid. That's... like R500,000 can be put towards a house, can be things that will actually grow in value. So
half a million rand is like a third of a really nice apartment in a good area.
It's a lot of money. So it's a lot of money.
Like, so, well, in Joburg, I can't speak for Cape Town. I think property prices.
That gets you half a shoebox.
But like you could get a 2-bedroom apartment in like Craig Hall Park, for example, or Ilovo for 1.5, which is like, you know, it's not
pretty
cheap.
Easily,
but if you put it into the perspective of you could buy a new car, you could buy a forever house.
Yeah. Like, the car, I mean, people will argue now that housing is no longer the sound investment that it used to be, and that's true. But there is no denying that it is a better investment than a car. Cars aren't investments, like straight
exactly.
up. Unless you're buying expensive collector's edition cars or, you know, cars that already hold their value that are already like 700,000-800,000 Rand. It's just not. Like after 5 years, that car's like not worth anything what you paid. But the banks are super keen, eh? They are. I've heard the worst adverts on the radio for tax-free savings accounts from banks that kind of, they don't explain to people. I mean, an advert is an advert, but the way they structure that. Okay, so let me back up here. Basically, there's this advert from Standard Bank that is like, you should have a tax-free savings account so that you can put money away that you can use for your wedding. And I'm like, that is the worst
it does
way
not
to
work
use a tax-free
like
savings account. Because like, if you don't know, if you take out of your tax-free savings account, whatever you take out gets taken away from exactly. your total value. So forever. You can never replenish it to that point no. again. So using it as a means to pay for your wedding is so stupid. Like, that is absolutely actually, ridiculous.
Okay, I haven't heard those ads, but that is dumb because yeah. the idea is that like a tax-free savings account should be something that you know, you want to look at for retirement, like a little something.
Yeah, that is last resort touching investment. Yeah. yeah. Like,
you should never touch it, ever.
Unless you absolutely have to, like you have no liquid God. Money anywhere else, you should not touch that thing ever.
But
Standard Bank is out here encouraging 20-year-olds to invest in a tax-free savings and wipe it out when they get married.
This gives me such joy because my brother works for Standard Bank and now I've got something to give him shit about. So.
It's ridiculous. I heard that on the radio and I was like, this is so... It's almost, to me, it's irresponsible because it's a bank, so it's a business. So clearly they see value in getting people to put the money away and not take a lot of interest and then use other means to save money that, you know, are more beneficial to the banks. Mm. But boy, I was just like, wow, this just is straight hilarious. Up like false marketing. Like, yeah, go tell your brother that I'm very angry.
My best is because my brother works at Standard Bank, my mom just assumes that you can get things done at the bank.
Yep.
I mean, and you would know, like, even if you'd never worked at Discovery, you know it doesn't work like that.
Oh, okay? Absolutely not. Yeah.
So it's like, I can't think of any hard examples off the top of my head, but like, it's like my mom saying to my brother, what is the interest on a home loan? And my brother's like, what?
I don't know. Like,
Yeah, like, what's going on here?
Yeah. No, when I was at Discovery, it was kind of the same thing. Like, I'd have people telling me that the Discovery Bank app was shit. And I'm like, sorry, like, it's not just me working on this thing. It's like a whole team of people. And then they'll be like, oh, what's the calculation on this, like, return on interest and whatever. I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, I don't know. I don't make those calculations. I just get numbers and that's it. Ooh, thank you. Coffee. So yeah, I totally sympathize with your brother.
Yeah. So hold on, give me a second. If you're looking for Lenny, she's talking to Annie.
What?
No, it's funny. My in-laws, so I've had a coffee delivered by one Tom Tweedy. Thank you.
Oh. Getting your father-in-law to deliver coffee to you. Now yeah, that is a flex if I've ever seen one.
Oh, no, but I just hear the door open. They're like, Lenny, hello, Lenny, because now I'm recording. And I'm like, she's not here.
Oh, is Lenska not there? Okay.
She's gone to talk to our neighbor, but that is just funny. Like, I have to put them out their misery. Jar banks, Standard Bank, worst bank. Kidding. Banks yes. in general, I think all of them, I don't know.
Banks like, are just
ultimately,
bad.
They want to make money. We all know this, but I don't know. Telling people to use a tax-free investment for your wedding, I'm like,
bad.
Even can I tell you? So I know people who know where I got married to go, wow. You had so much money that you threw that wedding. And I'll tell you, it cost money. But compared to what it would have cost in South Africa, weirdly enough, it is like no joke. If we paid probably a third, if not less, abroad with the shit exchange rate in Madeira.
And you literally got married on the beach.
Like one of the coolest venues.
Such a cool venue.
If I can say that. Okay.
It was a dope venue. I cannot believe that that's been like over it's 3 years
three
now.
3 years now, yeah.
Crazy.
And now you're 30. The hours slip away. You're going to blink. You're going to be on your deathbed.
I was like fucking 26, 27 at your wedding. What the hell happened? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, what happened?
My God.
Years start to slip by now. Yeah. So it's good fun.
You know what else slips by? Game releases. No, that's season. Later. Sorry. video games. We talk about them here on this here podcast run by two old farts. It's great.
Two old people. Mm-hmm.
I've been playing two games for review. Now that the
can I just say I'm grateful because I had nothing to talk about.
You just had Elden Ring, Elden Ring to talk about.
I mean, I'm still playing Kirby, right? And I'm so close to finishing Kirby. So when I'm done with that, I'll talk about it next week.
I've seen anecdotally on Twitter people talking about how Kirby goes places at the end.
Kirby goes places.
Okay, I'm very keen to hear about this. And I've heard like the final boss is ridiculous and like. Yeah,
I would legit compare it to Elden Ring levels of WTF.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
I do have someone at work that asked me an interesting question that was like, is Kirby in the, is it Kirby in the Forgotten Land, I think?
That's it, yep.
Yeah. He was like, is that game basically just Mario Odyssey but with Kirby? And I was like, I guess Mouthful Mode is kind of like Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, but it's not quite. So Mario Odyssey differed in that those levels are all hubs, right? Like you go to a level and you can pretty much go anywhere you want, and there's just lots of different moonshines to collect. You know, like
collecting alcohol? Udonk City.
What?
A moonshine? Not moon. Jesus.
Not moonshine, the moons.
Mario's going to all these hubs just to get fucking lit. Jeez.
Wow, I don't know where moonshine came from. Moons. No, so like New Donk City is a good example where you arrive and you can just run around however you want. Kirby differs in that, you know, you have to go from A to B to C to D in a level. It's a linear affair. And like says, there are some exceptions where they somewhat open, but not really. You still get funneled to a checkpoint.
Is it like that open wide thing? It's like you can get to this checkpoint in two ways, but you're still going to get to this checkpoint.
I can think of one example where that's the case, but ultimately you start in one area, you walk through a door at the end of the area, then you're at the next checkpoint. You know what I mean? It's
okay.
And yeah,
so more like a Mario 3D land type.
Yeah,
of thing.
So
okay.
Exactly. So Mouthful Mode, yeah, you're right. You could compare that to Odyssey, but I feel that Odyssey maybe did a different. I don't know what the raw numbers are like in Odyssey. You get 10 different enemies, or in Kirby you get 5 different Mouthful Modes. But Mouthful Modes like very selective and like very momentary in certain levels, like. You could take over a vending machine and shoot cans, but that'll literally be for like one segment in a quarter of the level.
Shooting, you know, cold cans like, for the boys.
Cool. I mean, it was just me shooting cans at the boys at 2 a.m.
Friday comes in, just like, just shoot me a can. Kobe's in the corner there, just shooting out of vending machines. Great.
But yeah, I suppose where Kirby stands out is that you're obviously trying to free these Waddle Dees that are scattered throughout the level. And I suppose you could compare them to the stars in any typical Mario game, where any Mario level has like 3 stars and one or two of them might be obvious. And there are some that are just obscure, like they're hidden out of sight, or you have to do something to get them. Kirby's got a lot of those in terms of the Waddle Dees, and they are just fun side objectives to do.
Are the Waddle Dees the same species as Kirby?
I don't know. So this game's got co-op where you
can absorb things.
No, well, see, that I actually need to try this out with Lenska, because you can play co-op in the game, right? You can take control of a Waddle Dee, but okay. I don't think they can inhale to get abilities. But I think they get things that let them help you.
They're
I don't know.
The boring Kirbys.
They just, yeah, they're just. Just old.
Do you think
Kirby's
they're also just made of complete orange skin?
They've got two-tone though. Kirby's just straight up pink. Waddle Dees are like orange and like a tan color.
I did ask the same person at work what he thinks the texture of Kirby was, and he looked at me very strangely. But then after a while, he kind of understood the question.
And he said smooth.
Well, he was like, you know, like the rubber on those like classic red dodgeballs from America?
That is perfect.
And I'm like, yeah. Because that seems stretchy, and that seems like weirdly fleshy in a way.
Yeah.
I like that.
So yeah, Kirby, I'm very close to end. So I actually have rolled credits in the game, but it's one of those things of like, you've finished the game, but here's 3 to 4 hours of extra content. And it remixes previous levels in very fun ways, and it just stitches them together into like, it's almost like it becomes a greatest hits thing of past levels, and you just run through them and they're different and more difficult, and it's so much fun. Like this game is weird, because I think people look at it and be like, oh, it's a Kirby game. And like, Kirby's not the Mario or the Link of Nintendo, but this is like the breakout Kirby game.
He's a tier above, man. Have you seen him in Smash? Link
I've
can't
always
fucking
loved
hold
Kirby.
A candle to him. Yeah.
I've always loved Kirby, but I can't tell you like that I've played any of the Kirby games from beginning to end. Like, I've maybe touched them, but I can't, you know, get on a pulpit to be like, you know, you have to play this Kirby game because it'll change your life. Whereas this Kirby game, I feel it's a proper elevation of this character, and the game is just real good. Like,
yeah,
people mustn't sleep on it, because it's, I would put it, you know, on the same level as an Odyssey. It's that good, I'd argue. Like, maybe not as good as Odyssey, but yeah, it's really good. So yeah, I'll definitely touch on it again.
I mean, my first exposure to Kirby was in Smash Bros. Because it was when you were singing the good blessings of the 3DS before I was a Nintendo lad. And you're like, there's this game called Smash. And I was like, oh, what's Super Smash? And you're like, oh, there's this pink thing that just floats. And I was like, man, that thing looks fucking cool.
It's the best. Kirby is still the best Smash character, hands down.
I mean, when you turn into a little like 100 kilo weight and just drop on someone, chef's kiss.
It's the most annoying move.
Yeah, fucking most annoying move. I mean, I think for actual good Smash players, it's like one of the easiest to dodge. But like for people who do not understand Smash, it is infuriating to get hit by that.
It's impossible to dodge, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my spiel on Kirby.
Kirby,
so I actually did have something to talk about this week, but you know what? You can talk now.
So yeah, I've been playing two games for review. The one that I'm still busy playing and I've enjoyed the most is a game called Teardown. Mm-hmm. So Teardown has been in early access for quite a while, if I'm not mistaken. It started off as like a sort of like sandbox destruction toy. And has expanded to have like a campaign. It's still got some challenges and it's got its sandbox mode. So essentially what it is sort of like this hybrid between Minecraft and a heist game. So it's got this, it's got a sort of Minecraft-y look to it, although it's a bit more granular. Like you can tell everything in the world is made up of blocks, but those blocks are a bit smaller. So even though it's blocky, it's a bit more defined, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So that means the world around you is very malleable. It reminds me a lot of Red Faction Guerrilla, where it's like the whole idea is you can like break anything in a level and it reacts physically, like in a simulated way, but also in a ridiculous way. And everything kind of reacts with each other. So if you use a bomb to destroy wood, then you will like create a fire. You can use a sledgehammer to break down wooden walls, but the sledgehammer won't really do much against brick, for instance, stuff like that. And the idea is you have all these different campaigns with different objectives, and those objectives are usually variations on heists. So at the beginning, they start off pretty simple. It's like, cool, you need to figure out a way to steal these three computers, and there's early alarms for like fire. So if you create too much fire, then an alarm will go off. And then it starts getting more complex. Like, as soon as you steal the first item that you're required to steal, an alarm will go off and you've got 60 seconds to get out. So you spend a lot of time doing set up in the level so that as soon as you pick up the first thing, you've created like a route through the level so that you can get to your escape vehicle with everything that you need very quickly, stuff like that. And then as you progress, you get more and more tools to kind of make your job a bit easier. So you start off with just a sledgehammer and an extinguisher and a spray can bottle, and then you start getting things like a shotgun that can blow like holes through walls. You get pipe bombs. You get C4. You get planks that you can use to create platforms between, you know, buildings or stuff like that. So it is very much a game of here's these sandbox levels and they're these objectives, but your imagination and creativity is how you complete those objectives. Like there was one I played recently where I had to steal three safes in this like mansion, and the safes are very heavy, so I can't just pick them up. So I wasn't stealing them. I was actually dumping the safes in water. I had to like destroy them. So I had to transport these safes to water, but the wrinkle was that they were scattered throughout the level. Like all three were very far from one another, and each of them had moisture sensors. So if they got outside in the rain, the alarm would trigger. Or if I dumped one in the water, the alarm would trigger. So I had to set it up that I got all three close enough to water and had them, you know, like tied up to a vehicle or tied up to like a a little like hydraulic lift or whatever, so that as soon as I dumped the first one, the other two were within reach and I could quickly dump them and get to my escape route. And it's like, it's fun to kind of look at a problem and think about it for a little bit and be like, how am I actually going to figure this out? How am I going to do this? And find, like, I'm pretty sure I'm doing them in a way where if I watched you do the, like, you would do them in a very different way.
Different way, yeah.
Because there's so many ways you can approach this thing. Like, my approach to the safes thing was to get them all at ground level first. So I used C4 to blow holes in the floor and the safe's weight just kind of, like, dropped them down. And then I used a vehicle to create a path through the house that didn't destroy the roof, but basically let me carry the safes throughout the house. And they were protected by the rain the entire way through. Okay. And then once I got them all kind of close to one another, I attached them all to a single car and then just fucking yeeted that thing off the side of an island. Amazing. Into the ocean. And that was like really close to my escape vehicle. So then I escaped very quickly after that.
Okay.
So it's cool. It's really, really fun. I do think that they reuse, so there's only a couple of levels, like, and a lot of the missions take place in the same levels. They just change the objectives. I do think they could make that progression a bit faster, because I feel like I was playing the same levels a lot in the first couple of hours.
A few times.
Yeah. And then by the same token, I only started getting very interesting tools like 5 or 6 hours in. So I know that they want you to kind of learn how you can do things with the limited skill set before you just start blowing everything up. But I think that like ramp up could be a bit more, you know, it could be accelerated a bit. So it's a bit more satisfying.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's only on PC at the moment because, boy, does all that like physics simulation do a number on your CPU.
CPU power.
My goodness. Like, so when things get
switch
hectic
anytime soon.
Yeah, no, there's I don't think it could never come to consoles. I think it probably could, but I think it would have to be scaled back somewhat, because the sheer like simulation that's going on with fire and reactivity, it's hectic on the CPU. Like, I can start a level running at over 160 frames per second and end it like at 40. Because things are just like broken,
sorry,
and
what,
things are
what
fucked
graphics
up, like,
card and a CPU do you have?
Oh, it's just a 3080 Ti and a 5600. I mean,
it's time to upgrade.
Yeah, clearly. Teardown has forced me to upgrade here.
My goodness.
It's got a cool aesthetic though. I really like the sort of Minecraft blockiness, but it's got some like very realistic lighting and the fire looks really good, and the smoke that the fire extinguisher makes looks like puffy and real, and yeah, it's really fun. It's also really cheap on Steam. Let me actually just check. I think it's like 100 and something.
Teardown Steam. It is.
Because it was very cheap in early access.
It is a whopping 130 rand.
That's ridiculous. Because I mean, I'm not even done with the campaign and I've played over 10 hours already. And then, even after the campaign, there's challenges, there's sandbox mode, there's like community made challenges like mods. So yeah, I think for 130 rand, you are getting a lot of cool game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I like the visual aesthetic, right? Because like, I think you hit the nail on the head. It looks like it's kind of like a more realistic Minecraft.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the blocks, but then there is also this whole lighting system, which just makes it look...
It looks really good.
It looks really nice, yeah.
There was one level where I had to steal these documents, and I was like, oh, you know, there's no alarms attached to the documents. That's kind of weird. And then I realized that it was in the middle of a thunderstorm, and each lightning strike was causing a fire somewhere in the levels. And after a while, the fire set off an alarm. So I had to like run around the level putting out fires while I was trying to get these documents. And the whole lighting with the lightning strikes and then the fire in the darkness, it looked real good. It was real fun.
That's cool. But even just that example, like what an interesting, unique thing to keep the player on their toes. You know,
yeah, they definitely change up the missions enough to keep you on your toes. You're not doing the same thing over and over again. Like, it can feel like that, but I feel like if you're doing that, then you're not actually approaching the puzzles in the way the game expects you to. You should be changing your your approach fairly frequently.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is super fun. I think some of the best levels are where you have to destroy a structure. So it will be like, this structure is X meters too tall. So you have to like get it down to a target like meterage. But because everything works, it works on physics. So like if you take out the supports of a building, it will just topple over. And it's, yeah, it's
amazing.
Pretty good.
What a, like, that must have been quite a thing to put together from a dev point of view.
Yeah. You know, I think it's very technical. Yeah.
Like actual physics and weight to everything. Like, holy moly. Yeah.
There was a roguelike that I played. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, called Noiter, which was, it's not the same as this, but like every pixel is reactive to everything. So if you put acid, it just eats its way through like the level. And it's like, it's on the same level of that. This, like, the technical prowess to get that shit working seems pretty immense. Yeah.
It looks like a lot of fun.
Would recommend. It's a good time.
This is a sort of game, like, I know it's cheap on Steam, but it's a sort of game where it will one day pop up on Game Pass and I'll go, that's cool. Like, let me grab it and try it out now.
Yeah. It's super fun. I'm having a great time with it. Would recommend people check it out, because it is just silly fun. Even if you just don't play the campaign and you go in sandbox mode and just blow shit up, because in sandbox mode they give you all the tools and the tools are all fully upgraded and you can just go ham. Cool. It's like real fun. Yeah.
I'm sure there are some fun YouTube videos of people crazy shit.
Can you imagine there's some dope mods, like just like recreations of weird cities or things.
In the launch trailer I played earlier for video viewers, it did say there that there are tons of community mods, so
sick. Yeah, and you can download the mod straight from the game itself. Like, it's got think it's well integrated into the game, so it's fairly easy to get that
going. Makes me happy. I like it when stuff like that just works.
Yeah, so cool. Pretty cool. Enjoying that.
Teardown. Where did this game even come from? It's literally the first time I've ever heard or seen it.
I saw it a while back. I remember seeing a trailer for it and I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool. Like, it just, the concept of destructibility seemed rad. And then I know last year at, I don't know if it was at the Game Awards or like Summer Games Fest or something, there was a trailer there that like sort of reintroduced it with the campaign levels. Maybe, I was like, oh, now it's a heist game. Trailer.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember being like, oh, I've seen this before, but it never had this heist element to it. So that's how they figured it out, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's cool.
Nice. Tear down. Cool. You're still playing it, though? You haven't finished it?
Yeah, I'm still playing it. Haven't finished that. What I did finish was another game called Road 96, which actually came out last year on PC, but it came out on consoles recently, and that's why sort of like more reviews have cropped up for it.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Because I feel like I've heard that game.
Yeah, I think it came out like October, November last year on PC. The premise of this game is like it's a sort of like points and click adventure, mostly focused on like dialogue between characters. And the sort of hook is that you are a teenager that is trying to get to the border of this fictional country called Petria. And the country's got a very, very on the nose, like red Republican candidate who runs the country, who's like a authoritarian and dictator, and then this blue Democrat electoral candidate who's running for president. And then you've got like this resistance who doesn't think either candidate is good. So they are trying to like spur up the people to like, you know, perform like a violent revolution. Then you've got like a journalist who's like very much like a Fox News anchor who just spews out propaganda for the current regime. And basically you play as multiple teenagers who are trying to get to the border just to kind of like escape Petria. They don't see a future in the country there. And they are just trying to get out. And the whole thing is, like you just saw in the trailer, if you're watching the video, it's procedural. So each teenager you start off a journey with is like a faceless teenager that has certain attributes, like a certain amount of energy, certain amounts of money, and a certain distance from the border that you start off with. And then you kind of go through these vignettes. Every little stop in your journey, you end up meeting one of the core side characters, and you progress their story. And throughout the game, the procedural nature of the game is actually pretty good, because you don't see the, you know, a lot of procedural games, you like kind of see the strings in the background, you know how it's stitching things together. This one, I really had no idea how it was doing it, but over time, a lot of the side character stories started like overlapping. You started realizing like, oh, the kid that I spoke to two runs ago is actually the son of this character I'm talking to now. Or, oh, the person I chatted to right at the beginning of the game, they were talking to someone on the radio, and now I recognize that voice. It's this person that I've met now. And like, you start seeing how all of these things are going to converge as each run brings you closer and closer to the climax of the game, which is election day. So yeah, your choices throughout the game also impact how the game is going to end. Like, are you someone that is just in it for yourself to kind of escape, and you don't really care how, you know, what sort of future you're leaving in the country? Do you want to further the objectives of the resistance? Are you trying to spur people to go and vote, you know, so to not have violent protests, but to, you know, get things going in a democratic nature, stuff like that. So what I really liked about the game was, I think the procedural nature is very interesting. And I think the character side stories, most of the side characters are just really, really well written. Like, early on, you meet this guy called Mr. Yu, who's like the leader of the the resistance. And he's just like a cool dude. He's like this big, burly trucker who calls you young blood every time. And he's just like really, really cool. He carries some guilt from some past like violent protests, and he's like trying to keep people in the resistance now like away from violence, but also trying to keep them together. So it's interesting to watch that unfold. And then you also meet another girl named Zoe, who's trying to get to the border, and she seems to come from like a very rich and preppy background. So she has some like secrets that you uncover throughout the game that tie into like the core narrative. So like, chatting to them and just like seeing those moments between those characters is really fun. The thing that bums me out is that the overall narrative is, I just don't think it's really that strong. It's seriously trying to be like, it's trying to allude to real world events, obviously. Like, there are countries where, you know, it's real bad, and it feels like there's no hope for the youth there, and feels like there's no way that you can change things. But at the same time, it's also just like nonsensical. Like, the police in this game are desperately trying to stop teenagers from crossing the border, right? So if you run out of energy on a run, they'll just arrest you. They'll be like, oh, you're a missing teen, and they'll arrest you. And if you come across a policeman during a run and they figure out that you're one of the teenagers trying to get to the border, they'll try and arrest you.
Okay.
But you're like, okay, so why are they trying to arrest you? Because when they arrest you, they just send you to a labor camp where you end up dying anyway.
Why?
I'm just like, okay. So then why is the government so like hell-bent on stopping teenagers crossing the border when they are just like eradicating them anyway? Get that. Like, what is the end game? Like, what are they contributing to the country so much that it's worse to let them escape than it is to like kill them? So stuff like that just doesn't make sense to me. Another part that doesn't make sense is the candidate that is in power is like the majority leader, because he's very popular amongst the older people in the country. So like the majority of the voting base. But then the game also alludes to the fact that parents are actively trying to get their teenagers to cross the border because they don't believe in the future of Patria.
So it kind of doesn't fit,
It doesn't make sense. Like, how can he be the majority leader through a democratic process, but then the parents are trying to get their kids away from a dude who's literally sending their kids to death camps? Like, I'm just like, I don't... There's like a narrative disconnect that I can't like get over. And it dilutes the entire story of the game, because then like everything you're trying to invest yourself in for the future of this country, it just doesn't really work, because you don't really understand what is even happening around you. Nothing really makes sense. Like, the dictator in power, there's no real background to why he is the way he is. It's just like a, he's bad because he's bad.
He's bad.
And the new candidate that is trying to be voted in, everyone just talks about her at a very surface level, like, oh, she's voted in, all of the problems go away. And, you know, like, I get that you're trying to say that one form of government is better than the other, but we live in the real world and nothing is ever like that. When I posted my review, I went and read other people's reviews because I ended up like very low on the scale in terms of like the average. So I was curious what other people thought. And I came across a Kotaku review that aligned somewhat to my thoughts, but made a very good point. They were like, oh, the candidates in this game is the blue candidate, you know, the Democrats. And they are seen as the savior to everything and the answer to everything. And they're like, if you look at America, they've had a Democratic candidate there for, what, 2 years now? And not much has changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just because you voted someone in doesn't mean things magically get better.
Yeah, like overnight.
Yeah, and the game is trying to present that as reality. And it's just, it's like we don't live in that sort of world. So it completely, it undercuts their political message because it just comes off as like saccharine and like unrealistic.
Yeah. It's, It's, I was just going to say, sorry, you finish.
No, I was just saying like, it just, it's weird because it's, I get what they're going for. Like, I definitely see that they had a sort of idea and they wanted to just, you know, get past a certain message, but it just, it falls flat. And it takes away from the game's climax because I just had no real investment in how the game ended. And even then the game ended like with a very, tied up all the loose ends very neatly. And it was just like, oh, this doesn't feel like a reflection of the real world at all. So it's just disappointing in that regard.
Well, that's sad because, so I just wanted to say that mechanically it sounds very interesting. Like procedurally generated for a, you know, a narrative focused game. Like I can't envision how that is pulled off, but it's a pity that, you know, the overall story just didn't click for you and I guess many others. Like I guess you like you said, it just falls a bit flat.
It's like, it's definitely written in a way, it almost feels like they had an ending in place before they had the overall story in place. And
the journey there is just like,
it just doesn't make sense. And you can actually kind of see that in some of the, some of the writing with the side characters. So many of them are good and many of their moments are very good, but when they start intersecting, they are either very good when they intersect or they just fall completely apart. So, for example, there's this guy, one of the side characters named Jared, who's like this deranged, murderous taxi driver because he lost his daughter like a couple of years ago in a violent protest and she died there. So he's like very anti the resistance. And he's very anti the current regime. He's just like in it for himself and he's out for revenge. He's like hunting down the leader of the resistance and the very Fox Newsy news anchor, Sonia Sanchez, as a sort of like revenge plot. And like he is unhinged. Like he ended one of my runs prematurely because I grabbed something in his taxi that he didn't want me to see and he just killed me.
Sure.
And then in another one, I was just walking along the side of the road and I investigated a van because it had food. So I wanted to replenish my energy. And he jumped me there and he's like, oh, are you a resistance member? This is a resistance van. I'm going to burn you alive inside of it. Like he's fucked up, like hectic. So you get these like flashpoint moments with him where you see he's just really messed up. But then when he finally gets to a point where he's about to assassinate Sonia Sanchez, like this whole journey that he's been planning for years and years, he literally gets up behind her. He hears her basically talking to someone about how she regrets not being able to save a girl at some previous protests. And it ends up being his daughter. He just immediately is like, okay, cool. She's fine. And I'm like, what?
But that's also like such an instant leap of like, what a coincidence.
Exactly. What a coincidence that she, and also what a coincidence because when I've interacted with her throughout the game, she has no sympathy for what happened there. She doesn't show any sort of guilt for what happened there. Mm. And she shows no remorse for her role in kind of like, spewing propaganda for the current regime. You know what I mean? But then all of a sudden she has this moment of clarity where she has this tinge of guilt for this guy's daughter. It also so happens to be at the exact moment he's about to kill her behind her. And then after that moment, she goes back to being the same character that she was. So it's just like, it makes no sense. That's, like, it just makes fucking no sense. It's such a weird character turn out of nowhere, and it undercuts the entire journey completely. So, yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Bummer. Well,
but otherwise, like, still, I would, like, you know, it's on Game Pass, I think.
I think it is.
I would recommend, you know, I think the full thing took me like 8 or so hours to finish. You could probably get through it faster. And some of those side stories with those characters are really good. Like, there's some really good character writing there, but it's just, it's uneven. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think that's what, like, irritates me, is because there is so much good stuff that I kind of wish there was more of that good stuff to go around.
Mm. It's, look, so just from what you've told me, it even, you know, before you've shared your criticisms and thoughts on the game, it sounds like a very interesting premise for a game, regardless. So I think even that in itself, it's interesting enough to just try out if you do have. Is it on Game Pass? I think it is.
Let me just double check. Road
96 Game Pass. I feel like it is.
Because it launched on PlayStation and Xbox Now.
Let's see.
No, it's not. There's smart delivery, but there's no Game Pass.
Why did I think it was on Game Pass? Yeah. I feel like, I don't know.
I'm just looking at a Major Nelson post, and
it would be a good Game Pass game.
I think it would be a good Game Pass game, because you could try it out for a few hours and be like, you know, do I want to continue playing this? So, but yeah, it's cool. Not on Game Pass yet. Maybe it'll come later, but
cool. But that is Route 96. Look, it sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like interesting, and I wish it was better, because the interesting parts are really interesting and I really like them.
Mm.
But it's those not so great parts that are just a real fucking downer on the rest of the game.
Yeah, just sad.
So,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's all the games we've played this week.
Yeah, that's most of what I played. I'm going to be playing more Teardown and catching up on some stuff. I am playing Metroid here and there. Like, I'm chipping away at Metroid Dread. I feel like I've restarted the game, I think, about like 5 times.
Oh no. You gotta
just
stick
because
it out.
I always played the first hour and then I took a long enough break that I was like, fuck, I don't remember what's going on here.
Yeah.
But now I'm far enough in. I've killed the second, what are they called? EDI, I think. Yeah.
I can't remember. It's been a while since I played that game.
Yeah, I've killed the second one, and I still don't have the fucking Murph ball, the Morph ball. Why is that such a long...
pretty late, if I recall.
That's ridiculous, because I actually started playing the Samus Returns one on 3DS, and that's like the first upgrade you get is the Morph ball.
Oh, well, then they've done it differently. But I mean, you've played what, like 2-3, maybe 4 hours now?
Yeah, two, three hours. I'd say. So, I'm having a great time. I'm able to travel between 3 hubs. Put it that way. Yeah.
So, I mean, the game itself is like 8 to 10 hours. It's not too long. But I mean, you will have seen by now, don't you love how the levels fold onto themselves?
Oh man, it's incredible.
It's what blew me away about that game is that it's, you know, a 2D Metroidvania, but it always somehow finds a way to drop you exactly where you need to be.
Yeah.
Like every time. There's very few times where I've been like, oh, I need to now backtrack to this first area because I've got this ability. It's like it plonks me down in the hub I need to be, and then I play for like half an hour, get a new ability or an upgrade, go through some pipe, plonk down exactly where I need to be, and I'm like, I don't know how they...
It almost feels like a linear game at times, because it's got a ridiculous amount of like forward momentum. Just like
exactly, like, which, you know, some people might criticize it for that, but I love it. I'm like,
I
holy
loved it,
shit.
Yeah. Because you're still figuring stuff out. Like, you can still go off the beaten path, but like I always feel like I have a critical path ahead of me. Like
exactly
like you said, it's like I don't get an ability and look at my map and be like, I've got to backtrack through half of this fucking map. Mm. Yeah. It's like very immediate. You use it there and the shortcuts that it opens lead you right back to where you need to go.
Where you need to be. Yeah. And it's incredible how they've married.
Very good.
Like how they've, I mean, I haven't watched any speedruns of this game, actually. I should go back and see how people break the game, but it feels like they've tiered it off in a clever way that you can't, you know, it does it, at least to the average gamer like me, it doesn't feel like I can just cheat the game and like, oh, there's a shortcut here. It feels like everything's locked off as it needs to be and they lead you through it in a very smart way.
I have had one or two instances where I've, you know, I've had this like crazy forward momentum. I'm just running because, man, you move so fast in that game. Like, it's almost like you're at a sprint constantly.
Yeah.
And then there's one or two instances where I'm like, I get to a place and I'm like, I feel like I can't be here yet. But then I don't know where else to go if I go back. And then both times it's ended up being, oh, I needed to shoot the wall.
I've had that too, as well.
Fuck's sake. Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm not like super versed in Metroid's design language.
No, I've had the same thing where there was one or two moments where it was, you know, when I did it, it's like, oh, that is glaringly obvious. But
like I went to that fire, the level where there's so much lava, and I'm like, I should definitely not be here. And I went back and I'm like, there's nothing else for me to do in the main hub. And then when I went back to the fireplace, I was like, oh, there's a whole route here that you can get through without even having that upgrade. And now I'm even at like a third hub without even having the upgrade to explore the lava levels yet. So I'm like, it's kind of crazy.
You'll find you bounce between, eventually you unlock like, I mean, I'm thumb sucking like 5 to 6 hubs and then you end up bouncing between them. Like you'll take a lift back to the old one.
I'm only on 3. My goodness.
No. I could be wrong, but there are a fair few hubs and you'll start bouncing between them so quickly.
I've enjoyed the boss fights though, but they are challenging. Wow.
They are.
It's very challenging. The number of times I've like gotten past the first phase and then the second phase starts and I'm like, oh God, I'm going to die here for sure.
But like, what I liked about the bosses is that they telegraph well, and then when you learn them, they're actually not that difficult. Yeah. Like, you'll die a few times, but the moment you learn the pattern, it's like, oh, yeah. It's actually relatively straightforward.
I'm not a super fan of the ED levels, though. The whole, like, nemesis system things.
Yeah, I think I'm not big into those. The counter time on those are...
It's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
It's, like obscure, yeah.
I get that they are meant to feel dangerous and whatever, but the number of times I've literally, like, I walk in that room... And that thing is literally right in front of me as soon as I enter that room. And there's like nothing I can do. I feel like those areas are very trial and error. Like you need to know the route that you're taking through them because if you run into like a dead end, you're just fucked. Like they follow you so quickly and even having the invisibility mechanic like doesn't super help. So I'm not big into those areas, but otherwise the rest of the game is pretty great. Pretty fun. That counter and shoot might be one of the best feeling
very satisfying
ever. It's very satisfying.
Love it.
You'd be happy to know that that is in the Samus Returns one on 3DS.
I believe so, yeah. That's when they first
It's actually kind of ridiculous how much Dread kind of is just that game. Like
it's just like on a Switch 3D scale.
It definitely doesn't look as good. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, Metroid Dread on the Switch looks real good.
Yeah, it's very pretty fantastic.
Game, runs so fluid.
It's a game that takes good use of that, you know, being in 2D and whatever, but man, it feels fantastic and it just looks great. Yeah. It must look so good on your OLED one as well, because there's so many shiny, like contrasting dark scenes and stuff. Like, oof.
Yeah, the sad thing is that, so when we reviewed the OLED last year, like I got to see what it looks like on the OLED, but I inevitably ended up finishing it on my Switch Lite, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a pretty game, man. Super good.
Good time. Should we move on to game releases very quickly?
Yeah.
I don't think there's... We are definitely a drier patch of game releases now.
Do you still listen to the kind of funny... game cast or the
not as routinely
so you know blessing yes. joined I really like him, but every episode when it started, he's like, hey Tim, do you smell that? It's review season, because obviously we were in review season, like there's just game after game after game.
Yeah,
now though this week's episode is like, Tim, do you smell that? it's backlog season.
Yeah, like, that's obviously, true.
You know, there are games coming out, but there's no like none
there's
of
no
the
big
you know,
big ones that need like tons
AAA,
of your time
heavy
for
hitters,
reviews.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
So I laughed.
I say that, but there's two bangers this week.
Okay, where are we? We in the last week of April.
Yeah, so it's from today, April 23rd until April 29th. Is the releases we have here. So firstly, we got The Serpent Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Rogue Serpent, I don't know. April 26th on all consoles and PC. Then coming out in early access on PC, Dune Spice Wars. This is the 4X strategy game set in the Dune world.
Spicy.
Spice
is
Wars.
It a strategy game like an RTS?
Yeah, strategy game, yeah. Well, RTS it... and 4X, you know, like the...
Interesting.
I don't know how to describe 4X, but yeah.
So I as a kid played Dune, the RTS, and...
Yeah, it was a good game.
That was a good time.
It was a very good game.
Although... Looking at it now, you could only select one unit at a time. You'd have to click the move button. Yeah.
Were there the sandworms? Did they kill you?
I can't remember. I played that as a kid. That was mind blowing back then. I was like, holy shit, what a game!
They've kind of spun up this game pretty quickly. I guess maybe that's why it's in early access. So
yeah,
yeah. Then we've got King Arthur Knight's Tale coming to PC April 26th. Got Zombie Army 4 Dead War. Coming to Switch, so I think that's the port of Zombie Army 4.
Yeah.
April 26th. Also an early access on PC, Hollow Mento coming to PC April 27th.
Nice.
Unsold, PC, Xbox One, and Switch April 27th. Capital with a K, Sparks of Revolution coming to PC April 28th.
Of course.
Trigon, Space Story, PC April 28th. And then the two big ones for this week, I think. Rogue Legacy 2. Out of early access and officially launching on PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series S. It is on Game Pass, as far as I know.
Is it not on Switch?
Not yet. Not at launch. No.
So this is interesting. Let's just put a pin on this here. I actually have been playing Rogue Legacy this week, and I'll talk about it next week.
Mm-hmm.
I only picked it up because I saw that Rogue Legacy 2 is coming out, and I've heard a lot about Rogue Legacy 1. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was Rogue Legacy 1 like one of the... earlier roguelites or roguelikes
yes,
that like
yeah.
took off. Okay.
It was one of those big ones that found a lot of life on the PlayStation Vita.
Okay. That makes sense. Cause I, for some reason I kept thinking like, okay, Rogue Legacy 2 is coming out and I don't know why, but Rogue Legacy 1 has this part of my memory where it was like beloved years
just
ago
big, yeah.
for whatever reason.
I mean, it's old. Like Rogue Legacy 1 came out ages
It's 2014
ago.
Or 2015, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good few years. So it's funny because I looked for it on Game Pass, not there. Looked for it on Steam, but I mean, it costs some money. Went to my Epic launcher and it was in my library.
It was one of the free games a while back. Yeah.
But I don't remember ever claiming it. So it's like, oh shit, I actually own this game. So yeah, I've been putting a lot of time into it. I've probably played 6 to 8 hours and I'll get to talking about it at some stage, but what a great game.
I find it so hard.
I had
think
no
it's
idea the
so
sequel-
fucking hard.
I had no idea the sequel was coming out so soon. So that's cool.
Yeah, I think it launched in early access around this time last year, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been in early access for about a year now.
Okay. And yeah, you're right. Game is super challenging.
It's so fucking hard. The first few hours of that game, I'm always like, my God, I just don't know what to do.
It reminds me a bit of Spelunky where it's super challenging, but when you learn the language of the game, like you get obviously a lot better at it.
Yeah,
not to say that I'm not dying regularly, but
the roguelikes, you know, or roguelites at the time of that sort of flavor. And I think they were the ones that kind of like cemented this idea that roguelites are very, very hard and that's just what they are, you know what I mean? So
I'm having a good time. Okay. Take that pin out. Another big release this week.
Nintendo Switch Sports, hell yeah. I'm
the
fucking
biggest release
stoked
this
for
year,
this.
Some would
argue. I am super keen for this. Like I've listened to people doing, there was some preview coverage a week or two ago. People got to play. I watched some videos. I'm all in on this, man. I'm going to do some fucking virtual bowling at home.
Did
it's
you,
gonna be a great time.
I mean, you never owned a Wii, right? But I'm
I didn't,
sure you played.
But I had a friend who had one. So I played a lot of the tennis and the bowling and.
Yes. Let me tell you, the Wii was a good time because obviously this was a title that was packed in with the console itself. I played many an hour of the tennis with my brother, and it's actually quite funny how you know, it's funny to say the game had depth because you literally couldn't control the characters. You would just return the ball.
Oh, yeah, because you didn't actually move them to the spot.
You just swung the racket. But the way you moved the Wiimotes dictated ball spin and things like that, which was like mind-blowing that was a thing. So I'd love to know how they've evolved that specifically. I mean, obviously I think they're introducing volleyball and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah, they've got one. I don't know if it's like a Japanese sport or something, but it looks like you just bash each other with sticks. It almost looks like a game from like...
What a good time.
Gladiator. Yeah, there's volleyball. There's tennis as well. And as far as I know, it's the same thing. Your person just moves and you do the swing type of thing.
Okay.
There's bowling. There's one
and
other
I think
one.
Golf is coming, but it's...
Yeah,
it's
golf not, is coming later. Yeah.
Which is a bit weird. I don't know why it's not there on launch.
But I'm just keen to play some tennis and bowling, man. I actually last weekend, Shani and I were at Rosebank Mall and we went bowling at the arcade there because we saw it and I was like, man, I haven't been bowling in ages. Do you want to just play a game? And we played a game and it was a lot of fun.
Nice. A lot of gutter balls.
Yeah. I got a strike on my first thing and then never got a strike again. It was great.
That must have blown Shani's mind. She's like, yeah, we haven't bowled for a while. You go first strike. She's like, oh God.
Yeah, we started off so well. Like I got a strike, she got a spare. And I was like, Jesus, we haven't done this in years. We're pretty good. By the end of it, I got, I think maybe one spare after that and no other strikes.
I know.
She had three frames in a row where all the balls were gutter balls. And I was like, wow, we fucking peaked in our first frame. And that's where
you become the dick opponent. You like go to the lane and then pull up the little side things to help.
these are bowling alleys have become pretty advanced. Like, so you can set the rails for a specific player and it comes up automatically on their turn.
Oh, wow.
And then you also, when you bowl, they've got these LEDs on the side of the lane and there must be some motion sensing because they follow the ball. So as your ball is going down the lane, this LED is going. It's
and I have an important question. Do they still have the good animations on the screen above you when you get a strike or whatever happens?
They're still as cringy and cheesy as ever. They're great.
I love it. Yeah, it's the best.
Fantastic.
Cool.
And then the last game for this week, Ravenous Devils coming to every platform under the sun, April 29th.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So yeah, that's games.
Nice.
Should bounce news. To knees.
Oh my God. Joe, we need to fly.
We need to fly.
Talking so much shit.
The biggest thing for this week.
I did not.
Two Nintendo Switch exclusives get release dates.
Nice. So let's start with the one you excited
Hell
for.
Hell yeah, Splatoon! Let's go. So Splatoon 3 was meant to launch this summer. So this is somewhat of a small delay, which will make sense.
Mm.
Given the other date for the other exclusive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, on Friday, Nintendo confirmed that Splatoon 3 will launch on September 9th.
9-9, which is cool.
Yeah. There was a new trailer, which just showed off more 4v4
turf.
Gameplay. Which
turf war.
Listen, I love Splatoon. I'm looking at 3, and I'm not seeing like massive changes from the Splatoon formula.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm pretty okay with because I just love playing the multiplayer fairly like casually. Yeah. I guess if some people have been playing Splatoon 2 for years now, wanting something a bit more different, then yeah, I don't know. But I'm keen to see because like the second one also had a campaign mode, a story mode, which was actually pretty cool. It reminded me a lot of Portal because it was like puzzle campaign levels. And this third one is going to have a campaign as well. So I'm keen to see how they've kind of iterated on that. Actually, it says here, according to Eurogamer, in the single player mode, you'll fight the Octarians and discover the secrets of Alterna and the Fuzzy Ooze. Hell yeah.
Nice.
Sounds great. Love
say
it.
Say that at a family dinner with a straight face.
Along with this news, Splatoon 2's campaign expansion, the Octo expansion, was added to the Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion packs here. So if by some miracle you actually haven't played that expansion yet because it's been on sale so many times, you can now just play it ahead of this launch. So that's cool. Splatoon's fun.
I have not played Splatoon.
I cannot believe it because I think you will absolutely love this game.
I probably would, but it's one of those things that, I don't know, I've just missed. I don't know why.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this footage now, and there's a grappling hook. That's new. I mean, see a player zipping between different points in the level. That is very...
We all know...
Okay, this dude just spawned a spider tank. Okay, there's some new shit in here. I'm down. Okay.
Grappling hooks make games at least 30% better. We know this.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's a fact. Oh, my God, is a dude in a spider tank.
The efficacy of how good the grappling hook is based on how early the game gives it to you.
Exactly.
So Horizon Forbidden West gets 10 out of 10 there because you get it in like the first 20 minutes.
Right at the beginning. Yeah. Cool. So along with Splatoon 3 news, we also got a release date for
Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Yeah, so this one was the one that got moved up because Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was previously meant to launch in September. But I assume now because Splatoon was delayed, they were like, well, we got to shuffle things a little bit. So it is now launching on July 29th. So almost a full 2 months early.
Yeah, I was a bit taken back because I remember, I mean, I didn't realize that the date had moved up, but I saw the release date as July somewhere on Twitter and I was like, that's pretty early.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was so close.
Yeah. This is takes place after the events of Xenoblade Chronicles 1 and 2. According to Polygon here, in the third game, you play as new characters, Noah and Mio, who lead a team of adventurers from two rival nations. Cool.
Okay.
As far as I know, so there's been Xenoblade Chronicles, which is where Shulk is from, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Then there was Xenoblade Chronicles X, which was on Wii U, which was like a very far-flung future version where there were like mechs and stuff. Then you got Chronicles 2, which was a direct sequel to Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And now 3 is a direct sequel to that.
Yeah.
I've also heard that these games are huge, like super long.
They are humongous. Yeah. I mean, I played Xenoblade 1, was it last year or the year before? And yeah, it took me a long time to finish it. And that was me like mostly mainlining the game. The worlds are huge. And what blows my mind is that they were, I think Xenoblade 1 was a Wii game. Holy hell, that game had some vistas and it was huge, but I remember reading up on it and I think it only ran at like 480p or something, which is like, shoo. Look good on the Switch. I mean, Xenoblade 3 looks real good.
Yes.
The initial launch trailer is like, damn, the Switch has some life left in it. And, oh, there's me.
And would you, oh my goodness, would you say that like they very Final Fantasy-esque?
No, so it's very JRPG, obviously. The combat system, it's a thing of, I don't know how it changed in X and 2, and I don't know how it's going to change in 3, but it's a thing of, you essentially just have a whole lot of abilities that you cast.
Oh my God, sorry to interrupt, but that HUD is ridiculous. There's so much happening on that screen. Holy shit.
No, I don't recall there being things like dodging or whatever. It's literally just you spamming spells or abilities. So I don't know how they've evolved that. And it's still good fun. Like I had a good time with number one.
Okay.
So,
yeah, it's that series that I've always been meaning to get to, but then again, it's just so much. There's just so much.
Like, for sure.
Will I be able to play the first two before the third one? Never, probably.
No. You still have to play Elden Ring.
I mean, that's fucking hell, yeah. Exactly. So that's cool. Those two games getting... it's like Nintendo's 2022 is kind of taking shape. So that's great. Now we just need to wait for Bayonetta release date. That's all I want. That's all I want.
No Breath of the Wild this year, but that's fine.
That's fine. If we get Bayonetta 3, then I'll be happy. It's okay.
It'll be all good.
Yeah.
Other news.
Talking about sequels. This happened, I think, on Thursday because there's PAX East happening at the moment.
Yes, yeah.
So 2K had a sort of little press thing there, whatever.
Bam.
Which was super weird. We had Randy Pitchford playing the Borderlands board game with Giant Dice, and he looked like he was on a pound of cocaine. It was really something.
oh, my God.
But yeah, by the end of it, they announced a sequel to Tales from the Borderlands, which is releasing this year.
What?
Yeah, featuring all new story and characters. So what's interesting about this is that it was in development at Telltale before they like shut down.
Mm.
And now Telltale is back, you know, obviously new teams or whatever. And they're the ones who are doing The Wolf Among Us 2. They are not doing this game. This is completely in-house at Gearbox.
At Gearbox, okay.
Which is interesting to me.
Interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously Gearbox owns the Borderlands franchise, but how are they at narrative-focused games, adventure games? I don't know. I mean, did you play Tales from the Borderlands?
I did. It's, you know, a lot of people say it's the best Borderlands thing you can play, and I would agree.
I mean, really?
The story is very good.
Oh, the story. The story, okay. Story definitely was very good.
It's much better than anything Gearbox has written, which makes me curious about this. You know what I mean?
Listen, Borderlands 2 was cool. I liked Handsome Jack. True, it was a good time. But yeah, this I'm very curious to see how this turns out. We're like, where is it set? Will it be any good?
Yeah. Not sure. Listen, Borderlands 3 and the recent Tiny Tina's Wonderlands have not had the best track record for their writing, so I'm... not holding my breath, let's put it that way.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. So that's coming this year.
What else should we... let's talk about Sega here. So listen, I'm going to be super stoked by this news either way, but Sega is reportedly working on big budget reboots of both Crazy Taxi and one of my favorite games of all time, Jet Set Radio.
Nice.
Which at the surface is like, fuck yeah, finally, you know. Mm. More Jet Set Radio. Jet Set Radio Future came out like 2 decades ago now. So I'm like super stoked. But when you start reading more into the report, Sega named Jet Set Radio and Crazy Taxi as examples of past IP that it wants to utilize in reboots, remasters, and remakes, but for cross-platform free-to-play live service type games. So
what?
Like Fortnite. And I'm just like,
okay. Yeah, that's, you know, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm just,
I mean, it's like, funny because, like, so I've never played Jet Set Radio. Just going to put that out there. But Crazy Taxi is a weird one because I can kind of see, look, not that I want it to be a free to play game, but I can kind of see it getting that sort of treatment because, you know, ultimately you're just driving people from A to B across different locales. But still, it's a bit strange.
I do not understand how this format works for Jet Set Radio because Jet Set Radio was essentially almost like a Tony Hawk game. Like you got put into these little hubs and you had a bunch of spots around these hubs where you had to graffiti. And the graffiti was you graffitiing over government propaganda. It was very a sticker to the man type of style of game. But it was just like, find these cool routes through these levels and, you know, you got to find some interesting lines to get up to certain points so you can graffiti them. And that's all it was. It was exploring these levels and every now and then there were these like ridiculous boss fights in and around there. So I don't know how you turn that into like a Fortnite.
Yeah.
But like I said on Twitter, if this just means we get a new soundtrack for Jet Set Radio, I'm fucking all in. I don't even care. Because the composer is the same one who's done the Persona soundtracks. And Jet Set Radio Future soundtrack is a banger. It is so fucking good.
I need to listen to it.
It's on Spotify and it is so good. Like, I listen to it to this day. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Love it. So, yeah.
Things you love to see. Cool. Well, it's good and weird news.
Yeah, quite weird. I guess we'll see. I think Sega's in a weird position at the moment. They're like... they have all the success with Sonic that they didn't expect. And they're like, oh, what do we do now? You know, like, so I don't know.
That is hilarious. They're like, oh my God. Okay. Green light the Jet Set Radio and Crazy Taxi movie ASAP.
Good Lord. Well, speaking about movies, we got news on 2 video game movies this week. One that we know has been in development for a long time, the Minecraft movie. which originally was being helmed by the creative minds behind It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Mythic Quest, Rog McElhenney. They were previously attached to the movie and named in that role, but now it's like being helmed by someone else completely. And it will reportedly star Jason Momoa of Aquaman and Dune fame. So,
I don't know how I feel about this trend of Hollywood, I suppose it's a mix, right, of these big Hollywood stars being roped in to these game adaptions. It's so weird to me. Like, there really is this trend of just big names being linked to these movie tie-ins.
What's strange is that, according to Polygon here, in 2019, Minecraft developer Mojang said the movie will center on a teenage girl and her unlikely group of adventurers. But then also in 2016, Steve Carell was reportedly tapped to star in the film. So who the fuck knows what's going on with
this
film?
Who knows what's happening? Yeah.
It doesn't have a release date. Yeah, Jared Hess, who directed Napoleon Dynamite, has signed on as the new director for the movie. So I want to see blocky Jason Momoa. That's all I want.
All I want to see of this movie is what will it look like? Like, is it going to be an animation? Or is it going to be a live action Minecraft where they're like...
I bet it's going to be one of those which starts live action and then turns into animation.
And it goes animation.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
In other video game movie news, I guess now that the industry has kind of figured out that video game movies can be good, another one of Sega's properties is being turned into a film, Streets of Rage. Streets of Rage movie adaption is in the work, and it's coming from the John Wick franchise creator Derek Kolstad, according to a report from Deadline. So apparently wrote the script, and the movie will be produced by the same company that produced Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's wild. Interesting because, okay, I don't know what the story of Streets of Rage is, but it's a thing of you're literally making a, you know, an action beat 'em up movie. And you just see like a big name to tie to it.
It's
yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if you've got the writer of John Wick behind it, you know, maybe you get the choreographers, the action choreographers, and you get a very good like action movie, but I don't know what you do in terms of story there, like dudes punching each other in the face. Like, I don't fucking know what that is. So
I don't know. This trend, look, I love video game. I love that video game movies are become a thing because, like, who doesn't want to see their favorite game turn into a movie? But I do worry that we are going to get this influx of bad adaptions, which, historically speaking, there are far more bad game movies than there are good ones. So I don't know. It's a thing of I almost expect there to be a flood of these movies and eventually they do bad and people go like, oh, there's no money in this. It's just like Sonic is an anomaly where it's actually doing very well. So yeah, all eyes on that Mario movie. I don't know what that's going to turn out to be like.
Yeah, I'm super curious.
Mario
movie is going to be weird, I think, to be honest.
Super weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then last pieces of news.
Last
which
two
one you want
pieces,
first?
Halo Infinite's Battle Royale-like mode has been revealed finally. So, you know, Halo Infinite kind of like launched with a big bang and has kind of like fizzled out since this first season has taken literally 6 months
to
conclude.
It's been too long,
it's way too long. So the second season, which is long overdue, is launching on May 3rd. And with it comes three new game modes. So the first is a game mode called Last Spartan Standing, where 12 players spawn onto a big team battle map. With confined loadouts and 5 respawns. And the idea is to just be the last person standing there. Apparently, there's a sort of like gun game style twist to it where you upgrade to different weapons with each kill. So it encourages you to just camp and to kind of like go out and kill enemies. But there's also rumors that they might be looking at a, you know, a more traditionally styled Battle Royale mode. Certain Affinity and other Microsoft studios busy co-developing something with Halo.
100 Master Chiefs land
drop
on
onto
island.
A Halo.
Drop onto a Halo, sorry. Yes.
100 Cortanas drop onto a Master Chief who then drop onto a Halo.
Oh my God. It's just a Halo Infinite-ception.
The other two modes are King of the Hill, which is King of the Hill, and another mode called Land Grab, which features 3 neutral zones that players must capture to win, which sounds very much like
like
one that's already in there. Other modes on the way for season 2 include Ninja Slayer. Players get infinite ammo, energy swords, and grapple shot loadout. That sounds fucking
fun.
My
God,
hell yeah. Vampire Ball, which is like The Skull Carrier is no longer nerfed. Oh, mm-hmm. interesting. So you can run full speed and stuff. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And rocket repulsors, infinite ammo rocket launchers, and repulsor loadouts. That sounds like chaos.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe they'll give Halo Infinite a new wave of life, I guess.
I hope so, because I still desperately like Halo Infinite. I just need new content. Mm. That's it, yeah. And then the last cool. bit of news, nice news. There's currently some pre-alpha testing going on for Skate 4, as in this is actual pre-alpha. It looks like, you know, white box levels and very, very early development work. So I don't think Skate 4 is out anytime soon. But some footage leaked from there, and it kind of revealed this sort of free skate mode where players will be able to collaboratively build skate parks together, which sounds nice. Pretty dope to me.
That sounds cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like they are working hard on getting the feel for this game right before moving forward, which I think is the right move. Like, if you're going to be doing playtesting, the only thing you want players to do is kind of just move around in the world and see if that feels right. And once that feels right, then you can start fleshing out things from there, you know?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the Celeste mantra. Like, they did not move on until the jumping in Celeste felt good. Perfect. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm. So, yeah.
And we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
10 out of 10 game.
Cool. That's all the gaming news.
That is all the gaming news, which means we're moving on to questions. If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on our social media at Checkpoint Chat, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Tinder.
All of the places. swipe right.
Yeah, swipe right on Checkpoint Chat.
Okay, we have a whole one question.
Love it.
From
See, our viewers know when we're running behind time.
I don't know. So I've got some replies, but we'll get to that. So I've got a question from Dutch Matrix, who asks, have you ever patrolled the moon? Very, very easy answer for me. I don't know about you, but no, I have not.
Is this like a reference I'm missing?
I mean, there's a screenshot to a...
Oh my God, I have not seen that in fucking...
What game is this from?
Decades. Isn't...
It's a game called like Moon Patrol.
Yo, it's not Moonlander. That was like another game. But yeah, geez, I haven't even, my brain hasn't comprehended that game in ages. That has just like fired off all sorts of things in my head. That's pretty cool.
My goodness.
I like that.
Well, there you go.
What was that one? It was that old MS-DOS game where you had like a, little like spaceship and you had to try land it on like rocky land sort of, and you had like little jet boosters that was you just like slowly bringing your thing down, and if you came any sort of speed it would just be like you crashed and then you had to start again. I have no idea what it's called.
My goodness, you have to find it for me.
MS-DOS. Oh, it was called Lunar Lander. That's what it was called.
Okay, that rings a bell.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually the exact game where the screenshot is from.
All right, well, there you go. We've come full circle.
No, it's not. It just looks the same. But it is. Lunar Lander is exactly what I was thinking of. PC hilarious. Game. Which launched in... There's no way this came out in 2020. In 2002. Yeah, this YouTube video is like produced in 2002. And the first comment is like, there is no fucking way. This is like in the 80s. Yeah.
It's the reboot, okay.
Lunar Lander, according to Wikipedia... launched in 1969 in black and white and then was re-released multiple times. It even had a text adventure in 1969. The first graphical game was in 1973, which looked like it was running off a fucking oscilloscope. So,
my goodness.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, there we go. Okay, then we have two comments, not questions from people. We have a response from Megs, who says, happy belated birthday, Alessandro.
Oh, thank you. And thank you very much.
Another one from Miles down under, who says, happy birthday, Caption Barbosa. Nice of you to share your morning with us. Have an awesome day, mate.
Oh, I'm sure thank you
said that
you.
With an Aussie accent.
Thank you very much.
And that's it.
I appreciate it.
Oh, have a happy birthday. Now we're done recording. You can go have all of the cake.
You're going to eat cake. I'm going to eat pizza today. It's going to be a great 30th. And then tomorrow I'll wake up with bad knees.
Just overnight. Holy shit.
Bad knees Barbosa. That's what you can call me for.
I love it. Yeah, but that's episode 183.
Yeah, episode 183 of Checkpoint Chat. The podcast is getting closer to its 30th birthday at this rate. So, I mean, aren't we all? We're all just hurtling towards old age. So.
Our demise. My goodness.
Yeah. How's a bit of existential dread to end off this podcast?
Nice. Yeah. Enjoy your time on this planet.
Yeah. Enjoy it because it's actually slipping away from you every fucking waking second. Time slips.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm going to go play games now.
Remember when this podcast started? Well, you're older.
Oh my God. It started so long ago.
Thank you so much for listening as always. And we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Sweet. Goodbye.